This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Black Friday at Abercrombie is here with 25 to 50% off everything. And iHeart listeners are getting an extra 15% off with code IHEARTAF. It's a sale you've been waiting for, made even better with an exclusive stackable code. Shop Abercrombie in the app, online, and in stores. 25 to 50% off everything valid in stores and online November 24th to December 1st, 2025 in U.S. and Canada. Excludes clearance and gift cards. Online price reflects discount. Use code IHEARTAF to get an additional 15% off everything in stores and online at checkout November 24th to December 1st, 2025 in U.S. and Canada. Excludes clearance and gift cards. See details online.
Then the space hamster flew his hot air balloon all the way to the bottom of the ocean.
Where did that story come from? Book? Dream? Nope. It came from a conversation. Meet Miko Mini Plus, the AI companion that co-creates personalized story adventures with your child in real time.
What color was the hamster's cape? And what did he pack for lunch?
Unlock your child's imagination. Discover Miko Mini Plus and the magic of AI, exclusively at Costco.
A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto-renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right. Sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, the show where America is the star and the American people. Although President Eisenhower's name is forever etched upon our interstate highway system, Charles Zug wanted to know if this was true. Zug is an assistant professor of constitutional democracy and political science at the University of Missouri and is a Jack Miller Center Fellow. He's also the author of Dwight D. Eisenhower and the Federal Highway Act. Let's take a listen.
When you're driving down a highway in the United States, there's a good chance you'll see a blue sign with five white stars in a circle that reads Eisenhower Interstate System. These signs, which communicate the official name of the U.S. Federal Highway Network, reflect the nearly universally held belief that in 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower built the interstates, that it was Eisenhower who, through transformative leadership, convinced Congress and the rest of the American political system that the country's largest ever infrastructure project was both popular and necessary. That story is incorrect. Or, put more modestly, it bears only a pale resemblance to the truth. Saying that Eisenhower is responsible for the interstates is like saying a quarterback who got benched in the first quarter before scoring any points is responsible for his team winning the game under the leadership of a different quarterback 3 hours later. Did the first QB play some role in shaping the final outcome? Of course. But was he decisive or even necessary? That's much harder to say. And yet, the interstates did get built, and Eisenhower has, over the decades, gotten the lion's share of the credit. So what's going on here? For many Americans, the federal government is more of an abstraction than a concrete reality. Most of us know who the president and vice president are, and maybe some other nationally prominent leaders, such as the House Speaker or the Attorney General. We might even know of our members of Congress or our state senators. But most of the stuff that actually makes up the American state, all the agencies and departments and bureaus, are too distant from us to matter all that much. This is an odd thing because the federal government is immense. In 2022, it employed 2.87 million workers, nearly 2% of the entire U.S. workforce. Its annual budget is around $6 trillion, an incomprehensible amount for a populace whose median income is around $74,000 a year. For all this, how often is an ordinary American likely to encounter the Goliath that is the U.S. federal government directly? For Americans not serving in the armed services, there are two routine points of contact. The first is the Postal Service, which delivers our mail and provides some other services, and which has been around since the country's founding at the end of the 18th century. In fact, establishing post offices and postal routes is one of Congress's explicit responsibilities in the Constitution. The second is the interstate highway system. And for younger Americans unaccustomed to sending and receiving physical letters, driving on a federal highway will be by far the most frequent direct encounter they will have with the federal government. Unlike the Postal Service, federal highways are not mentioned directly in the Constitution. And for most of our country's history, the federal government played no direct role in their construction or maintenance. The country has always had roads, of course, but those roads were the responsibility of state and local governments, or in some cases, private contractors hired by those governments. This was not such a problem when the country was rural, and when people primarily consumed goods that they grew and fashioned for themselves. But as the country advanced, as people became more dependent on buying and selling commodities produced by people other than themselves, there arose a need to transport goods, services, and the people who used them efficiently from disparate parts of the country. The federal government did not keep pace with these developments. In the decades following the Civil War and leading into the 20th century, families and businesses struggled to keep up with the demands of a growing industrial economy, in large part because they simply could not buy and sell goods and transport themselves efficiently. And with the rise of personal automobiles in the early 1900s, access to well-built and properly maintained roads became more urgent than ever. What was the holdup? Well, a lot of stuff, but the chief impediment was tradition, or what political scientists call path dependence. Since the country's founding, the federal government had played no role whatsoever in road building, which meant that responsibility had fallen to subordinate governments. But in order to be effective, road building requires not only money and labor, but planning and coordination. Someone needs to plan routes that will help not just a few special groups, but the largest number of community members possible. And convincing the states to relinquish control of that power proved very difficult. As a consequence, the federal government played no meaningful role in highway building during the first half of the 20th century. The peripheral role it did play was in the form of matching funds. If a state highway authority built roads, the federal government would match whatever expenditures the state incurred, thereby, in theory at least, incentivizing more construction. The problem was the feds put essentially no conditions on these matching funds, with the result that there was no planning on routes. In some cases, a highway that should have linked major cities in bordering states simply ended at one state's border because the two states had failed to agree upon the route. Worse still, states that could have benefited the most from highway construction tended also to be the poorest and consequently the least likely to receive significant matching funds. Finally, two world wars, which diverted domestic resources and manpower to the battlefields of Europe and Asia, did little to incentivize road building on a national scale.
And you've been listening to Charles Zug tell the story, the true story, the real story, of how our interstate highway system came to be. What a mess right up until the 1950s. You'd had all that money deployed, all that capital deployed to fight two world wars, and this whole idea of matching grants, well, the various states couldn't get together and figure out what to do or where to put roads and how to connect them best for the American people. And then there was that problem of the poor states, the ones that probably needed roads the most, having no funds to match. When we come back, the problem of connecting the states, connecting our highway system together, the story of how the interstate highway system, ours, came to be, continues here on Our American Stories. Lee Habib here, the host of Our American Stories. Every day on this show, we're bringing inspiring stories from across this great country. Stories from our big cities and small towns. But we truly can't do this show without you. Our stories are free to listen to, but they're not free to make. If you love what you hear, go to OurAmericanStories.com and click the donate button. Give a little, give a lot. Go to OurAmericanStories.com and give.
Shh, you won't believe what my new friend just told me about dinosaurs.
Is your child having conversations you never imagined? Are they learning without realizing it? It's not a tablet. It's not a toy. It's Miko Mini Plus, the AI-powered companion that turns curiosity into endless learning. Hear the future of playtime. Meet the extraordinary Miko Mini Plus, only at Costco.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
The wait is over. The NYX Black Friday sale is on now at knix.com. Shop early and save up to 60% off site wide. Plus, all kinds of limited time daily deals from the number one leak proof brand in North America. Don't miss your chance to save big on innovative intimates like leak-proof underwear, wireless bras, shapewear, and more. Everything is on sale. Millions have made the switch to NYX's revolutionary period underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try them too. During the Black Friday sale, save up to 60% on super comfy, machine washable, and stylish leak-proof undies. Plus, shop the best deals of the year on NYX's best-selling assortment of wireless bras. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your NYX favorites or try something new during the NYX Black Friday event. That's knix.com. The sale ends December 2nd and sizes will sell out. Go to knix.com. That's knix.com.
You heard it before many times. Water is life. But do you know that almost half of the homes on the Navajo Reservation do not have clean running water? With your support, St. Bonaventure Indian Mission and School is ready to give water to Navajo families. So we invite you to help provide this precious gift of life to those in need. Contrary to many average Americans, Navajo families survive on just 10 gallons of water per day. You can help support St. Bonaventure's water delivery program by going to stbonaventuremission.org.
It's finally here, Black Friday at Ulta Beauty. Take 30% off MAC foundations and lip colors. Save $100 on the iconic Dyson Airwrap. And starting Tuesday, shop mascaras for $14 and lip colors for $12. Perfect for stocking up. To make it super easy, shop online and pick up in store or get same day delivery. Head into Ulta Beauty and shop Black Friday deals now through November 29th. Ulta Beauty, gifting happens here.
And we're back with Our American Stories and with Charles Zug, who's the author of Dwight D. Eisenhower and the Federal Highway Act. He's telling the story of how our federal highway system came to be, the real story. Let's return to Charles.
Enter Dwight Eisenhower, who in 1952 was the first Republican to be elected president in 20 years. Born in Texas and raised in Abilene, Kansas, Ike, as he was popularly called, spent his entire career in the United States Army, rising from West Point cadet to Supreme Allied Commander of the Allied Forces in Europe during the Second World War. Apart from a brief stint as president of Columbia University, Ike had never held a civilian post before being sworn in as president in January 1953. He was not even particularly close with the Republican Party. Both parties had attempted to recruit him for president. In fact, what seems to have attracted Eisenhower to the GOP had less to do with policy and political philosophy and more to do with the fact that most of his private sector friends all happened to be Republican businessmen. All of this will become relevant in a moment. How did Eisenhower come to be identified with interstate highway expansion? The relevant mythology tells us that Ike became fixated on highway building while serving as general in occupied Germany after World War II. Having witnessed the German highway system, called the Autobahnen, Ike, we are told, decided that such an infrastructure program was both possible and necessary in the United States. There is precious little to support this just-so story in the relevant archival material. Written statements supporting it appear nowhere in Eisenhower's papers or correspondence. The smoking gun would seem to be a line from Eisenhower's own memoirs, written years after his presidency, and likely romanticized in order to give coherence to the otherwise convoluted story of highway expansion. Besides this, there is no good reason to believe Ike was particularly concerned with highways, any more concerned than activist presidents Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, and Harry Truman, all of whom had at some point advocated for dramatic road-building projects during their presidencies. What made Eisenhower distinct was not his interest, but rather his strategy for pursuing a policy innovation that had been popular and recognized as necessary for a very long time. Shortly after his election in 1952, Eisenhower asked a Wall Street venture capitalist named Walker Buckner to design a financing scheme to fund federal highway expansion. Ike's reasoning was straightforward. During the 1952 campaign, Eisenhower had vowed to reduce spending and to work towards balancing the federal budget, which had expanded greatly during the New Deal and the Second World War. That foreclosed deficit spending as an option for financing highway construction. On the other hand, Eisenhower had assured prominent Republicans that he would also avoid raising taxes and also seek to lower taxes where possible, another priority of the post-war GOP establishment. These twin constraints left Ike with few options for pursuing what would need to be a massively expensive yet politically popular highway building program. The plan Buckner came up with, which Eisenhower circulated within his administration, proposed borrowing funds without actually counting those funds as part of the federal deficit. It would be like convincing another person to take out a car loan for an automobile that you would actually use. That person would be obligated to pay back the debt while you would derive the benefits of the new car. This plan went through several different iterations within the Eisenhower White House before stalling out in 1954. Ike's advisors appreciated the need to avoid deficit spending while also keeping taxes low. But as political professionals, they also had a hard time wrapping their brains around a scheme that would raise money for the government while keeping that money off of the government's balance sheets. Things came to a head in the summer of 1954 when, after having his vice president Richard Nixon announce a major new highway program, which did not in fact exist, Eisenhower authorized the creation of two distinct committees within his administration to study the issue and actually come up with a plan. One committee, called the President's Advisory Committee, would actually write a plan, while a second, called the Interagency Committee, would give expert advice. The first committee was made up of private sector business officials, all save one, Republican millionaires. The second consisted in government officials with authority and expertise that connected them to highways. These two committees hated each other, sometimes actively working to undermine the other's mission. Matters were not helped when, in 1954, the Democrats recaptured both chambers of the Congress, making any plan authored by the Republican Millionaires Club that was the advisory committee unlikely to receive a warm reception by the legislature. When the advisory committee ended up endorsing a plan more or less the same as Buckner's original from 1952, the interagency committee raised hell. So did the rest of the federal government. When, after failing multiple times to meet a self-imposed deadline, the administration finally sent the advisory committee's plan to Congress, it met with incredulity. Senate Finance Chair Harry Byrd, whose committee would control the fate of any highway funding scheme, lambasted the plan as illegal and got Ike's own Comptroller General, the chief accountant of the federal government, to publicly testify against the Eisenhower plan before a Finance Committee meeting. When the House and Senate both voted down the administration plan in the spring of 1955, followed by the House voting down a hastily written Democratic alternative shortly thereafter, no one should have been surprised. Finally, when it seemed like things couldn't get much worse for the president's agenda, poor Ike suffered a heart attack while vacationing in Colorado. Needing to recuperate, the president delegated most significant responsibilities to his cabinet under the leadership of Vice President Nixon. Counterintuitively, it was under these inauspicious circumstances, with the president sidelined by health problems and the administration's highway plan up in flames, that a few determined members of the Washington establishment decided to seize the moment. Two members of Eisenhower's cabinet, who had also been members of the marginalized Interagency Committee, Treasury Secretary George Humphrey and Commerce Secretary Sinclair Weeks, decided that highway expansion was worth the hard choices that Eisenhower had been unwilling to make. Working behind the scenes with key members of Congress, including Al Gore's father, Tennessee Senator Albert Gore Sr., Weeks and Humphrey hashed out a bill that significantly raised taxes to pay for highway expansion. But only those that highway users would pay, such as taxes on gasoline, diesel, and truck tire components. In the end, the feature that made the bill most attractive was that highway user taxes would in turn be segregated from other tax revenues into a special account modeled after Social Security, known as the Highway Trust Fund. That fund would supply building and maintenance money for the interstates based on estimated user revenue from the following year. Appreciative of the program's fairness and transparency, Congress passed it with overwhelming bipartisan majorities in the summer of 1956.
And a terrific job on the production, editing, and storytelling by our own Greg Hengler. And a special thanks to Charles Zug, and he is the author of Dwight D. Eisenhower and the Federal Highway Act, and he's also a fellow at the Jack Miller Center. The Jack Miller Center is a nationwide network of scholars and teachers dedicated to educating the next generation about America's founding principles and history. To learn more, visit jackmillercenter.org. And we've done a whole lot of storytelling with this great organization. And what a story this was. Ike gets all the credit, but in the end, it was these players behind the scenes, the Commerce and Treasury Secretary, picking up the remains of, well, a doomed plan from the beginning. And what they came up with was something brilliant: the user tax. That is, if you use the highways, you pay for the highways, gasoline taxes, tire taxes, and a variety of others that go into a highway trust fund for that use. And as often is the case here on this show, we love to get at the real history, not the mythological history that we learn sometimes in our textbooks. The story of how the federal highway system came to be, the real story, here on Our American Stories.
Then the space hamster flew his hot air balloon all the way to the bottom of the ocean.
Where did that story come from? Book? Dream? Nope, it came from a conversation. Meet Miko Mini Plus, the AI companion that co-creates personalized story adventures with your child in real time.
What color was the hamster's cape? And what did he pack for lunch?
Unlock your child's imagination. Discover Miko Mini Plus and the magic of AI, exclusively at Costco.
With Venmo Stash, a taco in one hand, and ordering a ride in the other, means you're stacking cash back. Nice. Get up to 5% cash back with Venmo Stash on your favorite brands when you pay with your Venmo debit card. From takeout to ride shares, entertainment and more, pick a bundle with your go-tos and start earning cash back at those brands. Earn more cash when you do more with Stash. Venmo Stash terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stashterms.
We finally switched to T-Mobile because with them, we can be connected here and there.
Dad, the cousins in Mexico have a surprise for you.
¡Listos todos! ¡Una, dos!
And enjoy the gift of staying connected. Switch and start saving today. Get four Samsung Galaxy S25 phones with Galaxy AI on us and four lines for just $25 per line. Plus, nonstop talk, text, and data between U.S. and Mexico. Visit a store, T-Mobile.com, or call 1-800-T-Mobile. 1-800-T-Mobile. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Amazon Five Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by a real serious improv podcaster. Tonight's review, Spatula for the Stars. When I'm dead and civilization eventually collapses, this spatula will remain. It will be the only rune uncovered by some unknown species of the future upon which they base their assumptions of our existence.
Eggs!
They will posit.
These extinct people like to eat their eggs! And this was their primary tool for cooking them. Let us teleport and put this device in the Milky Way exhibit.
Five stars, Zachary. Find your perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
Ooh, what a matchup we got, y'all. This is that classic HBCU vibe. Non-stop action, the band is rocking, and the crowd lit. Chants echoing, drum beat, everybody showing that school pride. Game like this? Yeah, it calls for an ice-cold Coca-Cola. Ah, crisp and refreshing. That's a game-changer right there. Mmm, yeah, that taste always hits the right note, just like the band at halftime. And just like that, we're back at it. Passionate fans, school colors everywhere, and an ice-cold Coca-Cola? That's a winning combo. No matter the sport, no matter the yard, everybody knows. Fan work is thirsty work. So grab a Coca-Cola and keep that HBCU pride going.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.